You may not think it, but if you're in search of some examples of the work of the blacksmith, your local graveyard can be a great starting point. To find out more, I go to meet archaeologist Dr. Christy Kniff at the old graveyard in Ahaskra, where we find some interesting aspects to the blacksmith's tale.
If you walked into Ahaskra graveyard and looked around, you'd say, but there's very little ironwork here. But yet, when you do come in, there's some wonderful ironwork. We have one example of an occupational symbol for a blacksmith.
Now, can you explain what you mean when you say occupational symbol? Is that similar to their stamp?
We often refer to them as vocational symbols or occupational symbols. They're the symbols of a trade that are carved on graveyard memorials, on headstones or on the recumbent ledgers that we find in graveyards. And basically what they comprise of are a number of the tools and maybe some of the work that they undertook. For example, here in Ahaskra, we have a headstone here dated to 1762 that was erected for a man called Patrick Sharkey. But when we examine the stone itself, we see that there's actually a pincers on it. There's a wonderful donkey shoe on it and a hammer on the other side. Straight away, I can tell you that's the occupational symbol for a blacksmith or for a farrier. And of course, the blacksmith and the farrier can be one and the same. The blacksmith per se might be a person who simply made gates and all that sort of ironwork for farms and for that type of thing. The farrier is the person that looks after horses and donkeys, shoeing horses and looking after the, if you like, the foot care of the animals. But in most cases, in most parts of rural Ireland, they were one and the same. The blacksmith was the farrier, or the farrier was also a blacksmith by extension. But if we look at this again, we'll actually see that as one of those lovely 18th century headstones. The lettering is carved in false relief. But if we examine the shoe, there's something else we'll see. And this just shows, I suppose, the skill of the stonemason here, the stonecutter, as well as the skill of the blacksmith. But if you look here, you'll actually see that the little holes for the nails are also shown on that. So this is a really fine occupational symbol. Now, we find these throughout County Galway. Not every graveyard has them, but it's important that when we're undertaking work in graveyards, that we note these. When we're recording graveyards, note the occupational symbols. The blacksmith's symbols are very prevalent, as are shepherds, people working with sheep and cattle and that. You'll see a lot of this on headstones. You'll see the sheep crook and you'll see all of those devices there as well. And other trades are represented. So, in fact, what you're looking at when you see these are maybe you could regard them as the poor man's heraldry. They're telling you about a person that held a status or actually believed himself that he had a status. This was a qualified tradesman, a man who served his time for many years before he could actually set up his own forge or work on his own. And it's almost like a piece of heraldry, but it's not heraldic insofar as that it's a coat of arms in the strict sense of you know, how heraldry is actually managed. And, I mean,
but more an everyday man symbol.
An everyday man symbol. But not every man is going to have a symbol like this. The other thing that we should look for as well when we're examining graveyards is look around and see maybe the name is written at the bottom. Maybe not the name, but the title. It might actually say blacksmith or smith. For example, if we were to visit Ashiart Cemetery outside Mount Bellew, we'll see that there's an actual headstone there for a man, Quigley is his name. And on that, down at the bottom, it shows pliers. It shows the hammer, it shows an anvil, and it shows a rasp for filing the hoof of the animal. But it also states that he was a smith. So you're getting, the double affirmation there, if you like, of this man's prowess, if you like. And often what you find when you see these, there can be stones that were erected, perhaps by a blacksmith's wife. Or you might also see that it was actually a woman that was recorded on the stone. So the blacksmith himself is taking it on himself to actually put up his own symbols, if you like, on a headstone that he erects to his wife. So, you know, it works in that manner. The earliest occupational symbol to a blacksmith that we have in Galway dates to 1682. And that was erected to a man called Thomas Tannion. The Tannions were blacksmiths up until the early 20th century. they're hereditary blacksmiths. But Thomas Tannion was buried on the floor of the Dominican Priory in Athenry. So a nice early date, 17th century date. So, you know, it's wonderful to find something like that that's so early. And when we examine that particular stone, we find that there are bellows on it, there are pliers on it, hammers, and then there's also a number of pieces that he appears to have made, or there could have been maybe tools that he made for himself. So, you know, it's an important thing there. That's a man making a statement about himself in the 17th century, or his family making a statement about him in the 17th century. So you can see that, you know, there's quite a bit of longevity to the whole use of occupational symbols. And indeed, if we were to visit St. Canice's Cathedral in Kilkenny, we'll see that there are actually 15th century memorials there on the floor for other trades, such as weavers and trades like that. So, you know, this notion of marking, I suppose... The occupation of people like these is long-lived and is an important thing.
And I would deduce from that then as well that the blacksmiths obviously saw themselves as an important member of the community.
Absolutely. The blacksmith, in many ways, even when you look at the blacksmith and you look at the blacksmith's forge, it was a central place in the community. It was almost like the community centre of his time, or maybe the man shed of his time, because all the men gathered around there. And of course, the other thing when we talk about the blacksmith's forge was also a place, the blacksmith was looked upon by the authorities as somebody to not to be trusted, because the blacksmith was the one who made the pikes. The blacksmith's forge was often the place where rebellions were planned. You know, we have plenty of songs and poems about blacksmiths, the blacksmith of Ballinalee, and all these characters that are spoken about through history. And even here in East Galway, there was a forge over near Ballinasloe, known as Scott's Forge. And Scott's Forge is no longer there. I remember it as a young fella back in the 60s. The remnants of the house or the forge was there. But it was believed very strongly that some of the weapons that were made for the Battle of Aughrim were made in Scott's Forge. And what's even probably more interesting is that in the more recent past, some halberds, which would be, you know, to be a weapon for dismounting people from horses and from impaling the horses. And, you know, they were almost like a battle axe, but of a different type. Some very crude halberds were recovered from a shed in Aughrim that were certainly made for the Battle of Aughrim. So you have to say, you know, that stuff went back to 1691, there or thereabouts, made locally by local blacksmiths. Maybe it was made in... Maybe they were made in Scott's Forge, we don't know. But this sort of longevity of the blacksmith, but going back again to the importance of the blacksmith, people with a trade or profession were important people, status. And what they're doing here, putting their symbols on the headstone, is they're reflecting the status of the family. You know, they're a little bit above the ordinary person buried in the graveyard. And this is what we do, I suppose. This is where heraldry comes in as well. The more important people in society mark themselves, to put themselves up there. There's a little bit of pride, and there was great pride in the blacksmith. The blacksmith was very proud of his work. Blacksmiths were mainly men, as I'm not aware of any female blacksmith. There probably were some, but they were mainly men. And, you know, as we said earlier, it was an important trade or craft within the community, because, after all, they made everything. When I find symbols of ploughs on headstones, I have to look back straight away to the blacksmith, because those ploughs, while they're shown as Arden ploughs, they may have wooden parts. We're talking about 18th century, early 19th century, before we had factory-made ploughs. Well, the blacksmith was the one that actually made those. The same when I find the occupational symbols for the various trades. Like in one place, I found spades. Spades on headstones. Well, the blacksmith made those spades. You know, this was in a time pre spade factories, and the very same with the sheep crooks and the shears and that. The blacksmith made all of those tools. So the blacksmith in every way was central to the community. No matter what you had to make or mend, where it revolved around ironwork, the blacksmith was the person, the hunter took it. And then, of course, the other side of that was the blacksmith's his trough. The trough that the water was in was believed to have cures for warts or for different ailments. So, you know, people would go there, they'd dip their finger in the... And it was probably something got to do with the iron and the heat and the water and this whole thing of, you know, when he'd be cooling the metal in the water, there could be some chemical or that being released that actually did have real curative power. So there's an awful lot going on in that space, if you like.
That's amazing, because that's the first time now in the series of this project that I have heard that about the trough.
Oh no, that's very important. Loads of people would have gone to the blacksmith's forge to be able to dip their wart or dip their finger or whatever it might be, whatever the particular cure that they believed in. They would use the waters from the blacksmith's cooling trough to perform the cure. The other thing that we have to look at with the graveyards are the gates coming into the graveyards. In the past, all the gates would have been made in a local blacksmith's forge. And if we were lucky enough, now, Haskra is one of the places that the gates have been replaced sometime in the 20th century. The gates here are 20th century. Part of them appear to have been made by a blacksmith, but to have been modified, if you like, with welders and stuff like that. So in a way, you know, that takes away the if you like, the significance of the piece. It's much better if we preserve and conserve the ironwork as it is. And I suppose the one thing that I would also like to say is that as far as ironwork is concerned in the graveyard, sometimes the little iron crosses, the little blacksmith-made iron crosses that we find, sometimes they're discarded. When people decide to put up new headstones over their plots, they throw the little iron cross to one side, and that's a shame. Certainly, it shouldn't be thrown into scrap. It shouldn't be scrapped. I suppose the best I would say is that at least it should be shown the reverence that it deserves, because it is a piece from a graveyard. It did mark someone's burial place, and it is an important piece of craftwork that at least it should be left to the wall, left somewhere that's going to be safe for the future. But all too often I come across the little iron crosses and the discarded, and I know that the next step is they're going to go, they're going to leave the place, and they'll end up in scrap somewhere. But some of these crosses are absolutely magnificent. And sometimes when we examine them, we can actually recognise the particular blacksmith. He may actually have his name inscribed on it, or he might simply have his initials. Or like the gates, he might simply have some sort of a stamp. Could be a particular type of floral pattern, could be a particular type of geometric pattern that he's using. But if we do enough of these studies, and if we look at enough of the regional, if you like, types, we should be able to come up with a sort of almost a checklist that we say, well, that particular stone there could be Sharkies, or that particular piece of ironwork there could be Sharkies, that particular piece here could be Bannertons. And of course, we have the Bannertons in Mount Belial, and of course, here in Haskra, we have the Bannertons as well. Now, I don't see any Bannerton work here that I could identify, but what we do have here is we have two very unusual pieces of blacksmith-made ironwork here. And I think we should go over and examine one of them. You can just see this. It's a framework, really. It's a very unusual piece. And there are two here in a Haskra graveyard, and there's actually one across the border in Roscommon in the parish of Craigs. But the one in Craigs is actually rounded on top. And if you look at these two here, what we're looking at here, they're frames. They have this particular one here has eight legs. It stands to about 30 inches off the ground, there, thereabouts. It originally had crosses at all four corners. As we can see, a cross is missing from one of the corners here. And then on top, it has three bars on their flat, running from end to end. And then it has four cross members. And all of the work here is riveted. We can, you know, and this is something that's very important with the blacksmith's work. When we look at the riveting, we also see that the bars themselves have a twist in them to give that bit of ornament to it. It's not just, you know, this, you could very simply just make this and, you know, not bother any more than that. But they're giving that little flourish. The blacksmith is proud of his work, and he will give that bit of flourish to the work. And if we look at the crosses, we'll actually see that the crosses themselves have a slight flare, like a fishtail terminal to them. And, of course, where the transom meets the actual shaft of the cross, or the vertical of the cross, you can see that it was heated and welded by the blacksmith. That's not electric welding. That's not modern welding. That's proper blacksmith welding of its time in the 19th century. What is it? That's the question. And when I first encountered these, I was absolutely amazed with finding these, because I hadn't encountered anything like this before. Generally, what you find are railings around the plot. But this particular device and another device nearer to the front of the graveyard here, to me, appear to be what are called mort safes.
Okay. Okay, because it looks like a cage or something similar to that.
Absolutely, that's the point. It's a form of cage. Now, it wouldn't be perfect. You could still snatch a body out from here. When I use the term mort safe, a mort safe was an iron that could be stone or iron, but mainly a big, heavy, clunky iron lid that was created, or a frame, a sort of a framework of strap work, you know, smith made, that was made to sit down over a fresh grave with the purpose of stopping the body snatchers from taking the fresh body to sell to science, to medical science. This was very common in the 18th and 19th century. In some graveyards, people had to sit up at night for a few nights to protect the body for as long as the body needed protecting. That's, I suppose, the best way of putting it. These guys wanted fresh corpses to sell. And of course, they were selling them. There was a market for them because medical science was at that stage where it needed bodies experiment on and to, you know, examine the makeup and that, see, you know, just what might be wrong. So these things were made. And this, in a way, is a vernacular form of mort safe. It was meant to protect whoever was buried beneath here for that period of time. So they're very, very unusual.
So there obviously must have been some concern on that front for them to go to this much trouble.
Well, that's it. And even if there wasn't a real worry here, we'd say that if there wasn't trafficking in bodies taking place here in this region, it seems likely that the people knew about this, that there was a fear, there was a worry, and the local blacksmith was asked to make this frame to put over the burials here. So you can actually see a totally different type of metalwork here with a totally different function.
Yeah, it's more functional than ornate, really.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, this is the sort of thing we can find. But generally what we find are the little crosses, and the crosses can be in all forms, shapes and sizes. Two of the nicest crosses that I have come across are actually in Kilcreest graveyard near Loughrea. And both of those were made, we think that they were made by a local blacksmith, a man called Cunningham, who came to serve his time with the Perses near Kilcreest. And, you know, he was serving his time as a blacksmith. So it's believed, the handed-down tradition, and one of the crosses is actually on the Cunningham plot. So, you know, that seems to prove the fact. But in one of the actual crosses, what we have is we have the cross itself with a twist in the shaft of the cross, a tall cross with a point on that you can push down into the ground. And on the ends of the transom, that's the cross piece on the cross, and on the top of the cross, we have a further little flourish for the cross. And then joining across in an arc, like a strap, to hold the arm from going slipping up and down, there's this round, mound-shaped strap. And springing out of that are two further small crosses. So in effect, what you have is you have a whole series of crosses. And what that represents, it actually represents the hill of Golgotha. That mound is the hill of Golgotha. And the two small crosses are the crosses of the two thieves, and the big cross itself is the cross of Christ. So this blacksmith, not alone was he actually making a fine piece of craftwork, but he also understood religious symbolism. He was able to bring, in a way, he brought an art form into his work that a lot of people won't see today. And the other cross that he made, the one that's actually on top of his own plot, if I'm correct, the one that stands by the wall near the gate, that has almost made it out the gate, actually has a pinchers on it. The strap work, instead of being, you know, it was actually what they did is they actually used the two arms of the pinchers to act as a supporting strap work. And you could miss it so easily. And the other interesting thing in both of those is that they were actually made out of the iron. That iron with the semi-rounded, one face is semi-rounded. That was iron that was bought for making the hoops for the wheels, for shoeing the wheels of donkeys' carts and horses' carts. And the blacksmith used that then as iron for making up, you know, the crosses for the graveyard. So you see all of this sort of stuff. There's so much that you can actually extract from an examination in a graveyard. Now, I did say that we have very few pieces of ironwork here in Ahaskra, which in a way is strange, because with the Bannertons here and the Bannert, you know, and their blacksmith's forge in Montbello, I would have expected to find more. But we do find these two really high quality pieces. But we have one other piece here further down in the graveyard itself. This now is a mix of wrought iron and a mix of cast iron. This is actually a piece that was made in a foundry. Possibly could be bought anywhere. Could be bought. This could have been imported. And we have plenty of examples of imported ironwork. We say, for example, in Crea Graveyard in Ballinasloe, which is a really big graveyard, we have ironwork that was brought in from Glasgow. So we can actually see the stamp and the name of the makers of that Macfarlane's of Glasgow, Macfarlane's Foundry. And also in that you find the numbers, if you like, the catalogue number. So you could buy these in sections, almost like an IKEA flat pack, and you could assemble them. So you could buy as much as you wanted. So if you had a huge plot, you could buy whatever number of lengths. And if we examine this one here, now we can't see any stamp on it, but what we do see is here on the actual bars that, if you like, enclose the plot here, that there's a little junction in the middle here. A nice little bit of classical work here on that, classical design. That's a piece of cast iron. That was cast. But the rod or the bar itself that goes into it is actually wrought iron. So we're getting a mix of two different types of iron here. And we see the very same here on the end. If we examine the piece here, the pillar, if you like, at the corner post, there's a few things we can see. First of all, there's this expansion here that allows the bars, you actually insert the bars into this, that holds the whole thing together. If you look at the piece itself, then you see that there's this sugar barley twist on this. Now, as I said, this is cast iron, so that was cast in a mould. But we also see this with the blacksmith. We saw it over there. We saw that sort of a twist where it's almost what we could call a sugar barley twist. What else can we see? We can see this wonderful fleur-de-lis here on top. The fleur-de-lis was a device that goes right back to the medieval period. But in many ways, what we're looking at here is the sort of a classically derived piece of graveyard furniture. So it's a totally different thing to the blacksmith's work. But some blacksmiths, some of the bigger blacksmiths, actually purchased the likes of the fittings and then made up the wrought iron work themselves, so they could actually assemble something like this for you. But by and large, these were imported. And of course, when we look at this, the importation of stuff like this, we also have to then think about, how did they get here? If you're bringing in something from Glasgow, how did the piece from Glasgow get in here into this corner of East Galway? What was the communication system? What was the route for bringing it here? Well, one of the major things, initially, the Grand Canal. The piece would come in to Dublin, be brought across by boat to Dublin, would find its way down via the canal as far as Ballinasloe. And a short while after that, within 15 or 20 years, we had the railway system to come into Ballinasloe. So as part of the study, if you like, of ironwork, the broader study of ironwork in graveyards, it should be an interesting study to actually look at how far pieces of ironwork like this migrated from, if you like, a railway station or from some sort of a terminus like that. It is a study in itself, because you're not going to get big heavy stuff carried all over the countryside. They're only going to go so far. Now, this is the sort of stuff that you would also expect to find quite a bit in Protestant graveyards, because in the instance of Protestant burials in a lot of the graveyards, they actually enclosed their plots with ironwork. In the Catholic graveyards, it wasn't as common.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, because obviously, you know, this plot that we're looking at here is the only enclosed one that I can see. So is that a symbol of your social standing if you took the decision to do that?
Absolutely, Sally, and it is. It's a big statement. People are just, this is my space. And if we were to go back to the medieval world, the medieval people didn't mark out burial plots. It wasn't something you did. You know, once you were dead, it was your soul that was the important thing at that stage. Whereas we move later through life and that, and we come up to the 18th and 19th century, we're now getting to a stage where everything is demarcated. It's about ownership, marking your own plot, marking your own space and that. And this is a statement of status. But as this is a statement of status, so is the use of the blacksmith's made railings as well.
And is it a further statement then if you chose to get your materials imported and didn't use the local blacksmith for this kind of job?
Well, I think, you know, it's that bit of poshness. I think there's a little bit of poshness there. We do it nowadays in other ways. You know, we do it with motor cars and stuff like that. You know, yeah, and this, you know, at all people, you know, you express, if you like, your wealth, or you would like to express your wealth, show what you have. A little bit of, I suppose, you know, that's that bit of show off that we get. And you could, you know, this is a little bit of bling in a graveyard. You know, when you look around, you see all these limestone headstones, which are absolutely wonderful. But then you see this fine piece of ironwork that's sticking out there, enclosing the whole space. And we became, you know, we got to that stage that we began to enclose space, holding our space. Nobody else can get in here. As a matter of fact, one of the most interesting pieces of ironwork that I've seen in many ways is actually in Kilclooney Graveyard in Ballinasloe. And Kilclooney at that stage would have been a mixed graveyard, both Catholic and Protestant burial. But there's a few burials at the back of the old medieval church. And one of them has part of an ornate railing surviving. But what does survive completely is the little gate going into that. And on the inside of that gate, there's the most magnificent 19th century padlock on it. Absolutely amazing. It's an amazing piece of work. But the lock was on the inside. And you'd say, what in the name of God was that about? Were they worried that somebody was going to get out? But, you know, but everything was there. There was no... You had no business in there. You were locked out.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know, would people have much interest in going in either?
No, they shouldn't have. But, you know, it's amazing what people do. And this is, I suppose, part of this. We get to the stage where we actually, you know, we're showing off our wealth. We're showing off who we are. It's a little bit high status. But I still think, when you look at the work of the blacksmith, it's more real. It's truer to the locality. It's the artwork and it's the artisan work of a local practitioner. It has a long history. It's something that's handed down. We observed the headstone of this particular man here. Well, if we were to do a genealogical study of his family, we might actually find that maybe his son, his grandson, or maybe somebody that married into the family became a blacksmith after that, and that there was a continuation of that trade in the area. Whereas this stuff... You know, it's factory bought. It comes from outside. It's an import to the place. But the work of the blacksmith is very, very important. It's highly significant. And really, what we need to do when we're undertaking works in graveyards is we need to realise this and we need to observe it. And when we're going to do work on ironwork, we also need to go back and speak to our heritage officer. In our case here in Galway, as Marie Mannion, you speak to your heritage officer. Find out what's best for that piece of ironwork. Don't presume that the best thing to do would be to sandblast and bring it off and dip it in zinc. It's not the best. Good wrought iron will be there forever. There's very little you have to do with it. And what you do is you take the advice of the experts on that. Don't damage it. Keep the welder away from it. If you must fix it, you know, if there's work to be done on it, which sometimes, you know, we find that they get damaged when trees fall and stuff like that, look at the best way to do it. Look at conserving it. Might cost a little bit, but in the long run, it's the proper thing to do. And you're actually preserving something that's very, very important in the community. And of course, by recording it, we're also preserving it. We're preserving it in a different way. We're preserving the names and the memory of the people. And that we're handing it on to another generation so that they understand the significance. Because we're at a point in time. We're possibly maybe a generation past that point in time where we're beginning to lose some of this. You know what I mean? The generation behind us would have understood all of this because they were a generation that grew up with blacksmiths and grew up with different trades like that, the country trades. We're a generation that are removed from it. We could lose the significance of it. But this project has the potential to actually unravel a lot of that significance. And of course, the great thing about this project is that it's going to be rolled out across the county. So what's happening here as a pilot around this corner of East Galway will actually be a bigger project into the future. Communities all over County Galway will be able to engage in this. People who have knowledge and an interest in blacksmiths and in the work of the blacksmith and in ironwork in general will be able to add their bit to it. There may actually be folklore. But there was a lovely little ditty when I was a young fella growing up. And Martin Mulhare, he lived at the four roads of Clonfert, at the crossroads. An ideal place for a blacksmith. centrally located. But the little poem went, Martin Mulhare, he lived in the square. If he didn't shoe horses, he wouldn't live there. And I think that sums it up.
That just tells the story, doesn't it?
I think so.